Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, Matt's Rule Edition.
What's up?
Back.
Hi, buddy. How's it going?
How you doing?
Oh, great. Enjoying the summer, enjoying all the expenses that come along with the summer and adult life and all that good stuff. So I'm looking forward to a little conversation about some football and some camp season, things that are cooking, you know. So, yeah, how are things going with you on your end?
How's the shoulder? Honestly, oh, my gosh. Shoulder, I'm having PT on that. I injured the shoulder Redcasters on my first day of vacation over a month ago, but it's getting better. But, like, just in general, like, we were talking about, like, we're just going through a little bit of a rough patch in life, just life things happening,
yeah,
whether
a lot
it's
of life coming at
work
you.
Or family, or you drove over today in a different vehicle. I was like, hey, cool, you got a new car. You're like, No.
The one I have is just not
the compressor one.
Healthy. Yeah, just the AC.
And what was interesting is it kind of leads into the conversation that we had talked about maybe having, which was about this off-season of, well, it's not really the off-season of hope.
No.
It's not really an off-season of hype.
Seriously, no.
But it's kind of been off-season of fun.
It has been fun.
I mean, between, you can see here on the graphic with Herbie or there, you know, obviously what Coach Rule has brought in, Sims there. There's Solich getting welcomed on. There's some other, you know, they're going to do a camp at Selleck.
Yeah, and the Go Big Project is moving along nicely.
And it was like, it's actually been a fun off-season to be a fan right now.
Yeah.
There hasn't been some of the lingering
You
know, pains of the previous years. And it's like, so football has actually been a fun thing to fall back on while we've had these other real life things that we all deal with.
No, that's exactly
it's true. Actually been something fun to fall back for on sure. And go, hey, wasn't that really cool what Coach Rule said or what they did or this, you know, whatever it is. There's just been these like series of actual good PR, good moments.
Yeah, that's exactly true. Because like you said, the last few off seasons, it's been a lot of trepidation and anxiety and like we've heard it all before kind of stuff. And so it's hard to get, you know, we still managed to do it, but it was hard to get hype. But this year it's just been like you said, kind of a lot of fun, enjoyable news. I find myself looking up news more and finding, you know, it's funny. And I think just kind of going along with your theme, it's like we're a little snake bit. We're a little scared to get too on board with what's happening as far as the news and the messaging that's getting out. But like, but it's more fun. It's more fun just to kind of watch it and just enjoy it. And like you said, like when you hear that the team is going to kind of go what do they call that? The Junction City Boys, and just have like that one little dorm that they're going to stay in and focus on camp. Like, I love that kind of stuff. I mean, that's the kind of attention to detail and really focusing in on what you're going to do there. Like, that's fun to me. I'm like, that's exciting. That's new. Hopefully that stuff works too. And I'm not going to go, well, we'll see. I mean, of course, well, we'll see. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we'll see. I want us to do better, but I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. If we're really trying to make the main thing, and we know it's not academics, just kidding. but like, get after the football, really focus in, knuckle down and do it. I love it.
Yeah. We have a baseball question here from Kurt already. What's your opinion on Nebraska getting a new pitching coach? I think we have the potential of having Max.
I fear I've misled you.
Max, not the guy. The idea that we have Childress already on staff. I mean, this is about as deep as we'll probably get into baseball, Mac. The fact that Childress is already on staff, it will be very interesting to see if he gets that call or at least role he plays. And because he was our pitching coach back in the day when we under Van Horn, and
I've heard it likened to like the pitching coach is almost like the offensive coordinator of a baseball team. I don't know if that's true. Maybe someone's just trying to make it simple for me.
Now you're asking the wrong guy here now.
Well, you know, I know enough about pitching in this last season to know that was an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. Clear as day.
And I mean, I assume it's like football. If your position group doesn't perform, you're on the chopping block. So I guess I'm not surprised. And you know what? You got to make moves in big time. The investment that Trev makes, and I feel like what we try to do with the fans anymore, mediocrity isn't going to be tolerated very much.
Well, and Will Bold even talked about that with Christie, who is the catcher when he played there and longtime friend. That was the pitching coach that just was let go.
Oh, okay.
And Will Bold, you know, wished him well and everything. But look, I mean, to your point, if there's an area where if you're clearly struggling – and they've struggled for a couple years there. So that's the thing too. We're not big into just firing guys to fire them, but look, if it's a habitual thing, if it's a couple years in a row and things aren't getting corrected, then that's when changes happen.
If the analytics tell you.
If the analytics say it. But you know, And that's the thing, like in college baseball, we saw it even this weekend with Iowa, and Iowa makes the regional, and they had great starting pitching, really good starting pitching. These guys went 7-8 innings in, and then they get taken out, and they have the lead, and their bullpen comes in there, and it just blows up on them. And that's how they lost some games and
strangest stuff. It's just such an interesting game in terms of how you have to manage what arms you put against what bats at what time. I'm sure it's fascinating if you like it. To me, I've never been able to really wrap my head around the theory that much. Mm. I'm always like, oh, you hit the ball far, kind of run fast, catch and throw. Mm. I'm sure there's a lot to do with it. I'm like, the pitching coach, what's he not telling him? You know, like, hey, throw some strikes.
Throw strikes.
Don't let him hit it.
Stop throwing balls.
Right? What now? What was the last part? Don't let him hit the ball. Like, I don't know how
you're doing it wrong. Kurt has another question here. He is stretching our Husker knowledge, and I appreciate this, Kurt. Where can they fit 600 more people to break the world record for women's volleyball since they're already at 91,000? It's a big stadium and it's going to be standing room only. And
maybe like some elevated stages, they could do that. Like that, or like a floating stage that they could hover above. I mean, there's a lot of vertical space
used. And the field. I mean, you have the entire stadium itself. And then when I first read that, I actually read it as where are they going to put, they're fitting like 400 more seats into Vandy for volleyball. And I just found out today
seems like a lot.
Yeah, I have a coworker that is a season ticket holder, and he just got an email or some correspondence from the athletic department today about where they're going to be putting them. They're going to be putting them up like it, you know, where the baskets on those sides. I don't know what you call that in volleyball, the baseline or whatever.
Sure.
The serving line, whatever. It's up in the far corners of each of those sides. So it's like C4, 5, 6, and C11, 12, 13, something like that. But it's up there in those areas. They're going to add some more seats. And so getting as much as they can.
That's
in there.
Probably okay. I think the key to that too would be how good is your video board game? Mm. Like if you can show the match, sometimes just being there is enough for the energy to get to the girls and have a good time with that. Like that, I can see wanting to be a part of that, but your sight lines don't, let's not act like those are really good seats. Those are crappy seats to see what's in and out. So like if they're doing a good job with the cameras and the big screens, I can see folks having a lot of fun with that, but you know, that fan experience is just like what they're trying to do over at Memorial Stadium. It's like, get it right.
As Tony says here, it seems pretty obvious. Cancel the concert and use the space to take the stage up. It's going to be Scotty McCreery.
Hey, and that is who?
What's that?
Who's Scotty McCreery?
He's a country singer. He was like on one of those American Isles or something. And I knew that it was going to be Scotty and I told you this a couple months ago because.
Did you?
Yeah, well, guy I know,
believe you.
A guy I know knows someone, and so, anyways,
is he local? Scotty McCreery? Is he?
No, but he's. I mean, he sang like he did a Star Spangled Banner here at one of the football games in the past few years and stuff. So, I don't know. I'm sure, he'll be good.
Well, I meant that's great,
but
hopefully, he's got a small stage.
But Corner here, he says, I'd love to see Rule out on the road. I thought about putting on some of the high school gear and impersonating a coach so I could sit on the coaches conference in Houston. I live here, of course. And I think that maybe that's a good way to get us. Segment. Not that we don't love talking about volleyball, not that we don't love talking about baseball there, but
it's just that people don't love us talking about it.
Primarily we're a football show, morons. Right? And we should.
Was Max saying it was the offensive coordinator of baseball? That's so stupid. I'm sorry.
We should get to talking a little bit of that. Before we do, let's quick get into some of our sponsors and everything. We have Alumni Hall, 2 Lincoln locations.
Oh, hey, Tony downtown. Said he won American Idol.
Okay. Oh, was it American? Okay.
Okay.
Did I say that?
You said a show. He was more specific about it. Maybe he did. Thanks, Tony.
Alumni Hall, 2 Lincoln locations, downtown. Have you been down to the South Point Pavilion store?
I haven't yet.
Yeah, they got the new sign up there and everything like that.
Nice.
We went down there. I took Alex and we got some stuff about a month or so back. Downtown store looks beautiful. Of course, they've redone that.
Is that where's that in relation to like the Grand? Is it the one?
It would be just across the street to the north from the Grand, okay. Right off of all P right. Street, like
gotcha.
Where Misty's, I think it's still Misty's down there, would be just to the west of it, that corner.
I know the general you're talking about.
Yeah, 1120 P Street. Pipeline Jerky, pipeline-jerky.com. Use Redcast at checkout, get 10% off. Help supply the pipeline. Yeah. Let's get some NIL into the offensive linemen.
Let's put our money where our mouths are.
That's right.
We want to run the damn ball.
And Redcasters, put your money where our shirts are. And
ooh,
our hats.
Yeah, right there.
Shane and Laura, smack and smooch out there in Elwood.
They're really fine shirts, too. I like the fit. I like they're breathable. I get a lot of compliments on these.
Absolutely. Use the QR code there. You can find them at Smack and Smooch, Facebook, and Twitter. And in our descriptions on social media, we have links to our store.
Smart.
All right, so let's talk about the off-season of fun.
The off-season
of
fun.
And I want to go back to that graphic for a second. Because
who's,
it was really, we were thinking through this, Mac. Yeah. You and I kind of went through it. It was like, it's the off-season of hope. It's like, no, not really.
Hope sounds too desperate, I feel like.
It's not the off-season of hype. That's Colorado's. And that was 2019.
For sure.
And that's a great point. Colorado's right now is
all about the hype right now.
But really, this is more about the off-season of fun. Yeah. I run into very few people, Husker fans right now, that are really upset about what the current regime is doing.
No.
Okay.
Very few.
It's still going to be, and we're going to get a little bit later. We're going to talk about some recency bias. We're going to talk about maybe some expectations that we have, but in general, I mean, no one's happy with the 4-8 that we just came off of, but that also feels like 10 years ago now. I mean, there's been so much between then and now.
If there's one nice thing about a coaching change, it's the lack of attachment you have to the previous season.
You know, except for the Iowa win, which is just kind of fun to just, it's fun to cherry pick that, but
yeah, no, we totally will cherry pick that.
But you're right though, because none of the analytics matter for this year from last year. They just don't equate because you don't know what they were being told to do, how they were performing it. Now the philosophy is a little bit different. So like the chains are off. Like we don't know what we got as a team. We just know that or hope that and are happy at the idea that our coaches are putting these guys in the right position to do something totally different.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jim in Minnesota, he says here, the best part of the offseason now with the rules is I no longer have to worry about things that, and that feels so good. And I think there's a lot of truth right there. It's the idea that, you know, we've heard this before. It's the adults in the room, right?
Yeah.
So there's an adult leading things. But also you said when you have that regime change, all those stats that come along with it, hey, we lost six straight times of this, right, or we lost this many times. Can't win
the close game.
Yeah. Our head coach has this record and he needs to go 24-0 over the next 2 years to get back to 500 or whatever the stat is.
Right.
It starts over right now.
Right.
And
it is
And when I think about this offseason of fun, it's them starting with Trev,
listening.
Who's a fun guy. We're all having fun with Trev. And that they're listening to what the fans want. Oh, so whether that starts with, you know, Herbie being back or Solich coming back, one of the things, you know, that's stuff that fans want to see. Then you have things that, you know, I think we want to see. Old school people like us want to see us getting under center and you know, having a mobile QB that can run the ball. We want to take a green jersey, you know, off the quarterback in practice, throw a fullback out there. Let's get physical. Let's win the line of scrimmage, those kind of things. And to see the staff really attacking that. And then what I really want to kind of touch on here is just the news here this week that Selig Dorm, they're going to go old school. Yeah. Selig Dorm. That's where Devaney, when Osborne came here and asked to be just a part of the program in the first year of Devaney said, well, I don't have a position for you as a coach, but I've got these rowdy guys out there in Selig, these rowdy players, and I need somebody to kind of be a TA and just, you know, live there and watch them. Right. And he sends Osborne out there and that's the start. And Osborne did a good job with that kind of remedial position. And that was enough to move him along, get him into being a GA eventually, and then becoming a position coach, working your way up.
Yeah.
And here we are in 2023, in the years of NIL and big money and transfer portals and all that. And Rule says we need to build a team.
Yeah.
And the best way to do that is let's get all the coaches, the players. We're going to be living in Selig for those 2 weeks during the time of camp where we don't have the full team, where we just have the 105.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me, one of the things I like about the staff is the through line seems to be very consistent with these guys. It's about, you know, accountability. It's about execution. It's about attention to detail. And they hearken back to some of the traditional football things that I think, especially in this day and age where everything is changing so fast, it's hard to know. It's hard to even keep up with college football, but there's certain things that we know we just love about it. Right. One of the things that Satterfield talked about was when we huddle, like that's where leadership moments happen. Is it within the huddle? Right. Like that's like, how can you possibly become a leader if you're just reading signs and making motions and like everybody calls a play. You don't have a moment to talk to your guys about what's next.
Yeah.
It's kind of, to me, it's within the same vein of that to like get a whole dorm for your team for the off season, like to really, you know, struggle through the heat and all that
Jazz of like fall camp together, like no separation. Like you're going to be housed with each other. You're going to learn about each other. You're going to grind together. And that's when growth and hopefully greatness comes out of that. But it's like, but to me, that's like, that's in keeping with what they were saying, you know, like, okay, that's exactly like what the huddle is. Mm-hmm. There are old school things about football that need to be maintained, especially college football, in my opinion, because the game is changing so fast. I'm like, we're rapidly approaching this NFL model that I don't know, maybe it works in the long term for money and everything, but I don't know that I love it. You know, a lot of traditions are being lost along the way, but like it's, some of the greatest things about football are just those moments in the huddles with the guys and in mm-hmm. those moments in fall camp with the guys. Like that's how you and I met. And we became good friends, like mm-hmm. hating running to the practice field from SCOTUS, you know, and ruining our new cleats on the first day on like 3.5 blocks of cement, you know, but you remember that forever. And that's how teams grow and come together. And I think it's not lip service. You know, this mm-hmm. is just like, when it's not lip service to say, we're going to hit the quarterbacks during practice. No. They did.
And they do it.
Yeah.
And it's not lip service to say we want to be a developmental program when part of being a developmental program is bringing the team together, mm-hmm. develop the teamwork, develop the relationships with the coaching staff. I brought up this tweet here that I sent out yesterday. Yesterday it was June 5th. And so far this month, Coach Rule and staff have hosted 9 visitors last weekend. They ran a camp on Sunday in Lincoln. They flew to Texas. They attended an NIL event with the 1890 initiative down there in Texas. Sure. They helped run camps yesterday and today, Monday and Tuesday, down there in Texas. When Trev Albert said he wanted grinders, this is what he meant. Go Big Red.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much truth to that. And well, not only because I wrote that, but nice. there's a lot of truth to that. And the thing that I like about it, this goes back to Jim's comment too, that there's somebody running the show, is that it's the perfect blend. Rule has so far been the perfect blend of new school and old school all at the same time.
Right.
Look, it is one thing to be a Husker fan for us to just say, throw a fullback out there, get under center, and just pound guys for 4 yards and get back to where we were in 1995. It doesn't work like that. This is a different age. You know, for all those people that said, get your, you know, Husker fans, stop living in the 90s, you're right. It's 2023. We have to play with a different mentality. So we have a head coach out there who values NIL, who value so much so they're flying down to Texas to talk with the 1890 initiative and the collective people and the fans and the supporters that are supporting that. He absolutely buys into that. He is supportive of the transfer portal, incoming and outcoming. He's playing in today's world.
Yep.
And at the same time, at the same time that he can do that, that he's doing the new school game, he also embraces certain old school things. Uh-huh. That's why I don't just let go of the green jersey thing. I don't let go of the fullback thing. I love the idea of going into a dorm. We haven't seen that.
Right.
I don't know when the last time. I don't know if Osborne even did that at times. I don't know. You know, they said they went all the way back to like the Camp Curtis days of, you know, like the Bill Glassford. They used to take the players out to Curtis, Nebraska, to the Ag College. And it was kind of the Junction Boys of Nebraska's day, but not in a good way. I mean, guys were just, well, it's Junction Boys times. Wasn't good either.
Different times.
There were guys that quit the team. They took a car down to McCook and got on a train and trained back, and they just said, "We're done." You know, we're not doing that kind of stuff. You know?
It was a different time.
It was a
different time.
But it's this new school and old school.
You know, it's funny. Those guys that quit were totally looked down upon too, and they were probably just like, you know, no, actually, they're abusing me. You know, it's literal abuse. Pussy. No, but. Some things for the better have changed for college football, but it's like what you said.
Mm-hmm.
He's all about recovery. He's all about the sports science. He's all about that. But he's also all about, we still have to be tough. We still have to be able to play a tough man's game, and that's what you do.
I mean, Buff Nation says Rule's using Prime's blueprint. Well done. Actually, we're not saying that at all, Buff Nation. In fact, everything we just said are things he's not doing.
A real account. There's no way Buff Nation tuned into our show.
Buff Nation. Oh, no, he's tuned in a number of times before.
What?
But Buff Nation, I didn't see goofy padded helmets at spring practice. I saw guys getting tackled. Or JV guys. I saw real football being played during spring ball. So, Buffs Nation, I appreciate you watching us. And, it's great that you can tune in during the offseason for us. But that's not what we're saying.
No.
In fact, what we're saying is what Nebraska is doing right now is unique. I haven't seen. In fact, when Nebraska got done with spring ball, and you and I, we got done watching the spring game, and then we'd go and we'd watch some of the other spring games. We watched Wisconsin's. And they've got a new staff in there.
Yep.
And Wisconsin's got a quarterback in green jersey out there, you know, throwing the ball with no rush coming on him. It's not real football. So I love it. I love when people critique our spring game. Oh, it didn't look good, or we had these turnovers and all this. And I'm like, We played a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
They played real football.
Sure.
Some of those guys we knew weren't even going to be around when the game was done, but they still played real football, real tackling. Yeah. Real.
And the quarterback looked good.
And the quarterback who's going to be playing.
Yeah, he
looked, and the quarterbacks who are going to be playing. I thought Harbaugh looked good for what we wanted to do. Purdy looked good.
Dude, you can't look at that performance and hate Jeff Sims' performance.
Yeah, I know. Colorado has fans. No,
they just have a bunch of burners.
Anthony, if he was using Prime's blueprint, wouldn't he have told over half the team to leave?
Yeah.
And I think that's a great point there too, Anthony, is that, you know, part of the blueprint was to let the process play out. Let's be a developmental program. And being a developmental program meant that we had over 100 players on this team up until the very end of the semester. We still don't fully know. We haven't been told exactly what players have agreed to leave or left under whatever the circumstances were, but we know that they got down to 83 to the point where then they offered Bullock and Borkircher to
walk-ons. I really like that idea anyway. And I want to circle
back. Walk-ons becoming scholarship guys. I don't think Prime's doing that.
And I want to circle back to Colorado for just a second. I don't really care what he's doing in Colorado. I think that actually might be the right move for Colorado.
I just don't think
it's apples to apples comparison. So when I say that I'm happy we got Matt Rhule versus Deion, that's not to shit on Deion. Like, Deion's going to do fine. And I think maybe that attitude is probably what they need out in Colorado. But like, some people are just like, yo, we missed our opportunity with him. Like, he would not have fit here. It just wasn't going to work. So I don't wish Deion any negative success except for when they play us. What I loved about him as a player, and I loved Deion Sanders as a player, one of my top five guys ever as a player. He's a little brash as a coach. That might work in today's
age.
There's no way to know yet how he's going to translate, but I do feel like if you give him enough time, he will eventually attract enough good talent that they'll be a decent team. Deion presents a different package than Rhule.
Yeah.
And Colorado is a program that is more susceptible to that kind of change than Nebraska would be. We're very traditional. We're blue blood, y'all. I'm sorry. That's what it matters. Deion, it might be great for them. Negative talk about him is just mostly fun and fodder because we're going to play him. I don't really actually have any ill will towards
him. I mean, you just said we're the blue blood. So look at this. You know, we did the offseason of hope. Nope. Hype. We crossed that out. And then we said, hype is what Colorado's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I don't even mean that in a negative way towards Colorado right now.
I don't either.
They are a one-win program a year ago that had 2,000 people show up at their spring game. They needed some hype. They needed something rebuilt. You know,
Deion's made a career on hype and cashing in on that hype.
And he's been able to immediately do that there. Again, not what was needed at Nebraska.
Not at all.
Nebraska had a lot of issues, close losses, and just some fundamental things. We need to get the details down right.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you've noticed Rhule hasn't had to do is as good of a job as he's done being an ambassador for the program and going around the state and doing a lot of great things. He hasn't had to go out and solicit fan support. It's there. The support is there.
No.
And I mean, he stepped right into it. He knew it right away. Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, this is, he's a Penn State guy. His wife, you know, him and, you know, that they have experienced blue blood kind of, you know, program too. And yet they come here. And I mean, it's apparent that the amount of attention that they get here, I mean, this is Nebraska,
you know, and at the end of the day, it doesn't even really matter who presented what first. It's who's winning games. Like, Deion will be looked at as a genius and forever have a style that people might try to copy if they're good right away. If Rhule's good right away, we're going to love everything he ever did. I'm like, it just matters. Like, we just got to win. There's several ways to skin a cat. It just, at Nebraska, there has to be some concession to the fact that, and I'm going to say it again, we're a blue blood program that requires doing things at a different level of, in Nebraska, you have to think in terms of program. Mm. To me, it just seems like with Deion, the program is sort of, the coach is the face of it. And that would never really work here. You know what I mean? It has to be the program first, not the face of the coach and all his brash statements and changing uniforms and stuff like that. That's Oregon stuff. That's where
you're trying to be in some ways above the program.
Right.
You're trying to make it more about.
Well, that's fine to kind of break on the scene and become a new power. I'm not saying that's wrong either. I'm just saying we're already a blue blood. We have a different way we have to do this. And the best part is that Trev and Rhule both understand that. I feel like I think they know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's fine that they've got Deion. It's great that they have Deion. It brings a lot of hype to that contest. And when we beat them,
It'll be fantastic. It's going to taste so good.
It'll taste very good. Mike Delaware. Oh, Buffalo. Yeah. Speaking of tasting good, the No Block, No Rock podcast at Nebraska Brewing Company. There's Mike Delaware and Matt DeGoat. Okay, so you're the goat. Now, I'm literally sitting right here, Mike.
Really nice to say.
I'm sitting right next to him.
But it says Mac, though.
You could argue when former head coach Frost got hired, he had similar tendencies in Flash. Absolutely, Mike. And
yep.
He did it from the point, a different perspective from Deion. Deion is a newcomer to Colorado. Scott was coming home and bringing some of that same Flash, and I'm going to change the tunnel walk music. And it was more like
that from Florida, though.
In Oregon,
that's true.
That too. Background, yeah. But it was coming back to. It's like this alumni coming back to fix things, and which is a different thing than totally. maybe in Colorado. Maybe it's more refreshing that it's not some alumni guy, that somebody that has some.
It's funny though because it's very similar. The way they embrace him is almost like an alumni.
Sure.
He just has that kind of magnetism that's hard. Deion's really unique as a head coach, as a first time Power Five head coach, because he's a Hall of Fame player, but he was also always kind of a hired gun, even as a player. Like he went to San Francisco, win a Super Bowl, went to Dallas, win a Super Bowl, but he kind of cut his teeth in Atlanta. Like so he was never like a one program person anyway. It's just kind of crazy. And Colorado treats him like he's Cordell Stewart or Rashawn Salaam or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. We got some questions here from Matthew here. Which game this season has the most potential to become Rule's first signature win? We might get into some of that to talk a little bit later.
It could be the first two.
Minnesota is mine right away. I mean, get it knocked out of the way.
Don't you think a Colorado win would be signature? I mean, could you have back-to-back signature wins, honestly?
Well, if you start...
You win a conference and then a non-con, both Power Five out of the gate.
If you start 2-0 out of the gate with two away games,
Away games, two Power Five wins. Mm. That's Jesus. What? I mean, come imagine that. We never had even close to that momentum in the last 6 years that weren't so fun.
Momentum.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about those 6 years in a second, too.
All right.
Before we do that, though, we got a little bit of recruiting talk.
All right.
Michael Burt, tight end from Omaha Creighton Prep. He all of a sudden has just kind of blown up here in the last day. And he had some Group of Five offers, I think, like Miami of Ohio. But then this last weekend, he went to a camp, I guess, in St. Louis.
Okay.
We were not at this camp. It's a camp we've traditionally gone to. We weren't at this camp this year.
Okay.
And as you can tell, it wasn't because the staff wasn't doing anything. We already said what they've been doing in June. So they were busy.
No,
and
then, you can't be everywhere always.
Can't be everywhere. Iowa was at that camp. Iowa brought him in. It worked him out. Iowa was the first offer within hours. You see Illinois, you see Minnesota, you see Nebraska.
Look at Iowa just being Iowa. Who do they put on? The fan. It's just such an extra unnecessary dig. It's almost like they're pissed off for losing the West last year because we beat them. I don't know. I get it. It's fine.
That's
pretty good. That's a good move.
Yeah.
It is a good move.
Well,
oh, hey, you're from Nebraska and you want to be a really good tight end? Look at this guy.
Well, yeah. I mean, Iowa, tight end you, and they certainly had success putting tight ends out there. But in general, this goes back. I want to go to the next slide because we had to, in a fun way. I never hesitate to update this graphic. I love updating this graphic or adding to this graphic. Is that we now have 10 in-state offers already out for the 2024 class, and I don't envision this stopping. There could be more. I mean, we'll see. There's going to be more players that are going to get chances over the course of the summertime with summer camps and as you get to their season and seniors that step up and play great. But as of right now, I think this is an update from the last time we did a show, Mac, because I think Danny Kalen was still – yeah, because it was the last time you and I did a show was the day that Rayola committed to Georgia.
Yeah.
So Kalen was still on the committed elsewhere list. We had one guy committed and three guys elsewhere committed and then all these other uncommitted guys. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Daniel Kalen is obviously now a Husker, the quarterback. Welcome. And we've got Ashton Murphy, Elkhorn South. Committed elsewhere, Eric Ingwersen, Papillion La Vista. If anybody watching, Jim in Minnesota, I know you're watching, you would know this. Is Eric, do you know if Eric officially, if he's officially staying with Pitt? Like, I haven't kept up on if he I know he was going to do like a visit here, but I don't know if he, I've been reading both things. I didn't know if he stuck around Pitt. So anyone that knows that, Jim, if you know that, feel free to put that in the comments.
Before we go any further, though, these two, I'm pointing, but no one can see what I'm actually pointing at. But
sure.
But the committed elsewheres, short of especially with the in-state guys, that is all subject to change, in my opinion. So you can wait on some of these guys, and if they see a turnaround in the season, I really feel like a lot of things could shift.
Oh, I mean, but, things can shift up until the second signing day.
Facts.
Okay, so yeah.
By the way, Mike, he talked about PJ Flex having a very punchable face, but which face? His old face or his new face? So, wait, okay, here's a poll question. Which face was more punchable for PJ Flex? Old PJ Flex face or new PJ Flex face? I almost say old PJ Flex face. For some reason, it was more annoying.
I love that. Back to Jim. Yeah, yes, he's been pretty vocal in his Pitt Twitter activity. I thought that was the case. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that. So, Eric, at least up to this point, but I think to your point too, Mac, nothing is settled. Nothing's final until you sign in December anyways. And there's so,
I think a lot of recruits are like us. Like, well, let's see what happens. Well, it might be really cool. I'd love to go to Nebraska if I felt like they were going somewhere.
And we were saying that a year ago right now about Malachi Coleman. And for all the obvious reasons, Malachi Coleman, who had offers from Georgia and all the best of the best schools, and he sat there and he said, I don't want to commit, you know, until I kind of get a chance to see how this thing looks. Mm-hmm. That was a year ago, and it didn't look good, but he liked what Mickey was doing.
Right.
And that was enough to get him to commit when Mickey was the interim. And then, you know, things happened there and he decommitted, but he still give the new coach, gives Rule a chance, and he ends up committing. And so the point is, I mean, in any more of the way with recruiting, we put down these guys in Nebraska. I hope they stay. I think they will. I don't have any reason to think that Kalen or Murphy wouldn't. The guys that are committed elsewhere, I think there's chances we can get them back. And then I see six uncommitted over here on the right side. But the main thing about looking at this is just that they're not slow playing.
No.
They're getting these offers out there.
Right.
And I'll go back to what we said the last show. And I think this is even – with Michael Burt, this is a good example with him. A lot of these things – do I love it that Iowa worked him out last weekend and we weren't at that one camp and that they offered before we offered? Of course, at the end of the day, I mean, my kind of steadfast rules, I always want Nebraska kids being offered by Nebraska first. But I also said the last show that I think this is going to take a full cycle, recruiting cycle for us to get kids in now, get juniors of this year, incoming juniors of this year, get them into your camps this summer. Watch them, recruit them during the football season, evaluate them. And so by this time next year, we shouldn't be seeing guys getting offered. If we want to offer a Nebraska kid this time next year, we should have already offered.
It would be nice to see this staff as opposed to another team coming in and making the first offer and then recruiting blowing up. It'd be nice to see it'd be when this staff offers a Nebraska kid, then his recruiting blows up because they know that the evaluation has been done properly and Nebraska's taking it seriously. And I feel like, to me, that's what this staff is doing by getting around and doing these camps and really going an evaluation. It's hard for me to be too critical about what they're recruiting this year because I know what kind of the cycle is so quick. And when you've been gone, Rule hasn't been out of football, but he's been out of college football. So like your recruiting ties, you know how deep they are. That's how important these camps are, is because you need to set the tone by sophomore year on some of these guys, juniors and others.
Sure.
You're going to get the late blooming seniors. And maybe that's where we make hay this year, but it's just kind of hard to do. So for me, it's like not even maybe next year, but 2 years down the line, if we're winning a little bit, if we're winning, you know, we go to a bowl game and we win 8 wins the next, and like you really start to see it build on each other. We get so impatient and for good reasons, but I think the way this staff is building things and the way the Rule builds things, the real harvest is going to be 3 years down the line. That's when we're going to be really good. Now, we might have some moments in between time in the recruiting or the transfer portal allows for some of that, but again, I heard Sean Callahan interviewing Garrett McGuire, and it was just like they say a few things when they talk about recruiting. They talk about length and speed, and they talk about being a developmental program. They want to see your athleticism, and then they feel like they can create football players out of you. But that's going to take some time, you know, and it just does. So part of it is winning the games you should win. Part of it's kind of winning your non-con, which they can do, I think, with the talent we have. But it'd be interesting to see in a few years how good this team – or how this team does look. Not how good it is, but I think in 3 years you'll be like, okay, I have a really good feel for how this staff is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was Jim was saying same thing here, that Michael Burt, he worked the Lindenberg camp this weekend. I think that was down in St. Louis, where Fleck and Abdul Hodge, Iowa, they were at, and they got to see him work out. Nebraska was hosting official visits this weekend, not at the camp. Again, I think some of this gets...
June is so busy.
Well, and I just think, I think from an in-state recruiting perspective, give this staff a full cycle. Mm. Give them a chance to get through recruiting players, you know, in advance, to where I don't, I'll be totally honest with you, a year from now, I'd be a lot more annoyed than I am right now if I saw another team coming in offering our kids before that. Like, I mean, Jim, you and I had conversations a year ago. I know, I remember you being frustrated for all the right reasons with like a guy like McIntyre from Fremont, who eventually you've got offered by Oklahoma before Nebraska. It's like, how are we going into year six at that time, year six of Frost? How are we not offering, you know, or year five of Frost, I'm sorry, but how are we not offering an in-state kid before, you know, Oklahoma comes in and identifies them? That's the kind of stuff I'm not concerned with Rule doing. I mean, this is what Rule, right now we're seeing 10 offers right now from Rule, you know, as is.
Well, and my thought was too, okay, let's say in year two or year three, we are not offering that guy. Well, then at least we should, it'd be nice to be able to understand why. Like, okay, we're saturated that position. Maybe he doesn't quite meet the criteria. Yes, he's from Nebraska, but he doesn't. Like, at least it makes sense why we didn't necessarily hit a guy. But sometimes it just doesn't even seem to make sense. Like, why we're not recruiting this guy if it's a position of need. Well, and he's within the borders. And when he checks the boxes athletically, size-wise.
And a good player, this is the development side. A good player, physically, I almost get away, unless it's a quarterback, shorter quarterback, position of need doesn't matter so much to me, because if you're a good player, if I'm looking at Michael Burke and he's 6'5", 226, yeah, he might be that tight end, but maybe we don't need him at tight end, but he might be a defensive end. We just saw that
AJ?
Yeah, Rollins.
Thank you.
Rollins, you know, they moved him around that way. And
it was an alley-oop.
I mean, you know, if the kid comes, if could be a great wide receiver, but that's not a position of need. Well, you know what? He might be a defensive back. I look at, you know, Caleb Benning right now.
I love that idea.
As an example. I don't know. Benning could be a great safety. He could be a corner. He could be a wide receiver. He could be a slot. He could be a running back guy. Look at what they're doing with a guy like, the fullback that they put in receiver.
Bonner.
Yes. God dang it, man.
I did a terrible job of reading you too. I'm like, oh, Janovich. I'm just going through these stupid names.
Matt's Rule, to all the followers here right now, Matt's Rule is we get together, we have a couple drinks, we just talk about life in general, we talk about cars breaking down, and by the time you have a couple drinks, then
Janarian, or one large one, sorry.
Janarian Bonner, there we go, goodness gracious, my brain, and it's really helpful having you guys following along and answering some of our questions for us, so I really do appreciate that. Thank you very much, but I just in general, I brought this recruiting stat up here just to show that, you know, the numbers are impressive. I mean, this is 10 in-state offers, double-digit in-state offers for the second straight year. Yeah. I don't see that slowing down with Nebraska kids. I don't even want to have the argument anymore, discussion that are we more talented than we were before. You know, that's been a thing in the past. I don't care. Fine, we're more talented. If that's what we are, we are. Mm. I will say we've always had the talent, but I appreciate the fact that it's being identified, it's being offered. And we're going to have big time schools coming in to recruit our kids. That's fine. We need to compete against them and we need to not slow play and be behind. I don't think the staff's going to be guilty of that moving forward, but I do think I'm really interested to see the staff once it has a full cycle under it.
And I also think it would be nice if we're doing a good job of developing that the in-state players that we do get hit a little bit, you know, like I'm not going to call any individual players' names out, but there have been some Nebraska guys that we have got, some higher ranked Nebraska guys we have got that haven't done as well as maybe we thought they were going to. Certainly no one to like a Noah Fant kind of level of performance. Now, the Iowa fan out there is going to say this because you guys don't develop worth a shit. And I can't even argue that. But like that can't be true anymore. Like that can't be the case anymore. It can't be that we lose a guy and he gets better because he went to a better developmental program. That can't be true anymore.
No, we've got to be the best at that.
Yeah. And I feel like that's at least on paper and the words they're saying, that's what we're turning towards, being the better developmental program and keeping the in-state talent here so we can do that. So go ahead.
I think that is a perfect segue into this. I want to have a discussion on recency bias.
Okay.
And it seemed like a good time for, there's a couple of just timely years that are coming up here that I wanted to talk about. And it just, it mathematically fit well to have this discussion. There are fans out there that are that think in, some of being Husker fans, some being fans of other programs that like to troll us right now, but that we, you know, we're snake bitten. We're not. Stop thinking about you're not going to be back to where you were before. Right. Whatever, let's define what that is in this conversation. But you're not going to get back to where you were. The '90s were that, and there's a lot of I think recency bias that goes on. We are hitting right now. We just got down with 25 years of post Osborne football. So Osborne was here for 25 years, and now it's been 25 years since Osborne coached.
That's been a total of 50 years.
That's 50. 25 plus 25. We have the coaches here during that time frame. There's Frank and there's Callahan, Pelini, Riley, and of course Frost.
It's
that built that up.
Look at that. Look at that. Five coaches, man. Who'd have thought? You know, when I was growing up, it was one coach. Same for you, obviously.
Sure.
It was one coach. Until my adulthood, it was like one coach. And then since my adulthood, five more coaches.
Well, it, and it's the
since my kid's birth.
It was that stability, right? Yeah. And, you know, people want to focus so much on the last 6 years. And I totally get it. We have done the RedCast since April of 2017. Our first show is 3 months after our last bowl game. We are well aware of the last 6 years and what the last 6 years have meant in terms of losses, in terms of not going to bowl games. We're well aware.
Yeah.
And yet, it's amazing to me. I'll have really smart analytical people come up and want to talk to me. You know, I'm just too emotional about things. But it's amazing how short-minded six seasons is in the grand scheme of things. Okay. You know, as I bring up this stat here, and I want to thank the good folks at Arbitrary Analytics have been helping me out with some stats here. I'm going to take this little
great name.
Yeah, I'm going to take this little graphic off. Hey, I'm just going to
chat them through this. I'm going to go reach some refreshments.
Oh yeah, go get
wrinkles. But I can hear you.
Well, yeah, you just listen. Fantastic. You listen to me.
And you go. This is honky time.
So basically, you know, it's the last six seasons.
Okay.
We've done some losses, but let's look what happened over the last 60 years. So six seasons is 1/10 of that. 10% of the last 60 years. College football programs with 500 plus wins. Nebraska sitting right there fourth. So we have this graphic up there for people listening later. Alabama's at 591 wins since 1962. Ohio State's at 570. Oklahoma's at 557. Nebraska's at 551. You go all the way down to 532 is Georgia. Now, we understand what trend lines are and the way that we've been winning and the way Georgia's been winning. If things don't change for us, Georgia could catch up with us in just a couple of seasons. And that is a problem, and that's what the last 6 years are. We are not denying at any point what the last 6 years have been. But from a macro level, the last 60 seasons of Nebraska football, there's a lot of seasons to go off of that would show that Nebraska, you know, it, in our rightful place where we should be, is right up there winning the 9-10 games a season. Now, someone will sit there and say, well, but that's going back. You got to go back further than 6 years. You got to go back to the Osborne era. Well, I would look at even the 19 seasons prior to that.
Exactly that, yeah.
Okay, I mean, again, we're talking about – this isn't a small sample size. 19 years of post-Osborne football.
Okay.
We went through multiple coaching staffs during this time. Yes. And we had, you know, all kinds of, you know, poor decisions, I would say, made during this time period. And still, during a 19-year period, you'll see us at number 15 there. As the 15th winningest program from 1998 to 2016.
Seems all right.
Okay. That was 5 years into the Big Ten.
And that's all of college football?
That's all of college football.
Or at least all Power Five or even non-Power Five?
Boise State's number one. So
15,
yeah.
Despite what we would probably call
we thought that
not the greatest stretch ever.
This freeze frame graphic here in time, we were the 15th winningest program in the prior 19 years. That's what when we got the RedCast together.
Okay.
That's fresh in our mind at that time.
Okay.
And we would have told you, anybody on day one, we would have said, wow, we are getting off of the, you know, this has been 19 rough years since Osborne was in charge. Well, that was with the 15th winningest program, 167 wins.
167 wins from 98 to 2016.
That is.
And that's good for 15th in all of college football
nationally.
So you know what that says to me? Blue blood. Well, I mean, even in some of the worst trenches, and I know the next 6 years are significantly worse.
Yep. Terrible. Look, we aren't sugarcoating what the last 6 years were.
No,
but
perspective's important, too.
I think that's what this is about, is that so much focus.
Perspective.
And it's, well,
fun perspective.
It gets back to the graphic of recency bias, especially in this world of this Twitter world that we're in right now. There's so much focus on the last six seasons.
For sure.
Nebraska can't get back to this because you haven't beaten this team in 6 years or 7 years or 8 years. That Nebraska hasn't done this in 6 years. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I get it. It's been 6 years. Sure. It has. And, you know, one of the things that has to happen is you have to hire the right person to get you out of that.
And not just the right person. You're right. But it isn't never just one person. It's several people. And the leadership is important.
Oh, gosh.
So start it where it should start.
It's this alignment. This gets into, I think, expectations of next season is that to get out of this, you got to hire the right person.
Correct.
We think we did that.
Yep.
We hope we did that. But when I look at some other examples here, now I'm going to use history as an example.
That's a good idea.
Alabama, 2007, Nick Saban.
He's good.
He comes in there after a number of seasons of where they have been. They've had losing seasons. Yep. They've gone through coaches. They had the Mike Price disaster, all that.
And I think it's important to stress this too. Alabama, though a good team at that time, you know, even prior to Saban's hire, like they were a blue blood program. They were not
true.
The Alabama of today where everyone expects them to be in the national championship game every year. That's not how Alabama was rolling. They were a very good team. They put up very respectable scores and records, but they weren't the team that you thought was going to be in the national championship every year. That was not Alabama. They were a good program. So I'm just saying things can change so quickly. And what does it take? The right coach.
It takes the right coach. And you say it can change quickly. 2007, Nick Saban's hired there. They go 7-6 in their first season. They beat Colorado in the bowl game, but they go 6-6, and they end the season losing to Louisiana Monroe. They won a couple of games against, I think, Ole Miss and Arkansas and maybe Tennessee they beat. Tennessee. So they won a couple of decent games. Picture us this year beating Minnesota and Colorado.
But
then, you know, the potential of losing to a Louisiana Tech or something. Alabama in year one of Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe in that bye week game. You essentially get the SEC gives them, you know, late in the season. Yep. They lost that game. But by year two, they're 12-2. You go to 1999, go to Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. And this is coming off of four straight losing seasons and really a bad decade by Oklahoma standards. And he starts off right away in year one, 1999, they go 7-5. And, you know, you get some things going, and by year two, they're 13-0. They win the national championship. Go to 2001. Look at Pete Carroll at USC. To put things in perspective, in 2001, when Pete Carroll got to USC, and everyone looks at USC and goes, well, they're in LA. You have all the California talent to recruit, all that good stuff. Go back and look at their records. They had one double-digit winning season between 1980 and 2001. One.
Wow. Say that one more time.
One double-digit winning season.
Okay.
They had a 10-win season in like 88 or 89.
I think Mike Riley was there at that time.
USC?
At USC. He was an assistant coach.
Oh, assistant. Okay.
With Cooper? Was it Cooper when they had that?
It would have been 88, 89. I don't know if that's Robinson. I'm not sure.
Or maybe Robinson. I think not Cooper.
But Robinson, the point is, that's what USC was going through.
Yeah.
They're a blue blood of football. Yep. And Pete Carroll, in year one, 2001, goes 6-6 there. Now, going into 2002, maybe there's some real smart analytic guy out there that would have said, yeah, I knew that Pete Carroll was going to get turned around. But I don't know that anybody in their right mind in 2002 knew that Pete Carroll was going to take USC to 11-2 in year two.
No.
And what this tells me is a couple of things. You and I have talked about expectations, and we've talked about ceilings and floors, and we'll never put a ceiling on this program. I will never sit there and say Nebraska.
It's your ceiling. This is ours.
I will never say Nebraska can't win X number of games next year.
Nope.
Okay. The I don't know, the pragmatist in me or whatever, I would look at things next year and go, I'm looking at Nick Saban year one going 7-6. I'm looking at Bob Stoops going 7-5 in year one. I'm looking at Pete Carroll going 6-6 in year one. And I would look at that and go, that seems a reasonable number to think, especially for us coming off of the four win seasons and everything, is that, you know, a 6 or 7 win season definitely should not be looked upon negatively by any light.
I agree.
And I think you can see all kinds of levels of progress in that process. But what it also tells me is when I look at that second year, I don't know that we'll go 13-0 in year two like Bob Stoops did, but the 11-2s and 12-2s that Nick Saban and Pete Carroll did, if Matt Rhule is as good of a coach as we think he is, he's demonstrated this at other programs where he took them over in worse situations than we were and took them to year three in their cases. If we're talking about year two, this should not be a long runway.
You know,
this isn't a 7-year runway that we heard about back in 2017 and 18. This should be get things right, do things right, and we can get this thing going.
If they do as well, if they get,
I would say anything beyond 7 wins this year is pretty damn good. I really would say that. I mean,
historically, I would agree with you.
And, and like, that's not to say that I wouldn't be disappointed with a loss here or a loss there. That's probably true because I'll tell you this: if we get to 7 wins, my imagination starts rolling. Like, we could have done this, we could have done that. Probably we didn't. If we get to 7 wins, probably we didn't play very well in some games because that would have kept us from 9 wins. Because that's what I think the level of talent on this team is. I guess is what I'm trying to say. And if that's the case, then no small amount of credit should go to Scott Frost and the staff before this, you know, if we're going to kind of bring it back. But I know the transfer portal is going to make a big impact on that. If you're talking your starting quarterback, hell, even the running back, Grant's a transfer. And there's, you know, the guys on the defense that might make a difference are transfer guys too. But still, it's going to be the core of the people that Frost and those and that group had recruited to, which I already think are a decent group of players. I already think they're good guys. I already, and I know you would agree with me, think that they have been in more games than almost any other program in history and still lost those games. So if coaching changes that fact a little bit, if being very good about situational football and building this team vibe up while doing like this Junction Boys thing about like just
going to Selleck and everything,
Then it's not going to be a very big surprise to me if we win more than 7 games.
No,
you know, but it's a hard thing because of recency bias. It's a hard thing to try to sell to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's that big of a stretch of an imagination to do it because we're dealing with a coach that has no history here. You know, his history is. And I'm not counting the NFL. I don't give a shit about the NFL when it comes to this. His history is he understands college football. And like you can tell just by how he's been handling these camps and getting into Texas and the NIL. Like you can tell this isn't a guy who – some people are so stubborn in their ways. Some are so set in their ways and so confident in their ability to do one thing that they aren't able to adapt to new things. Rule isn't cut from that cloth.
No.
Rule looks at what are my options? What are my tools? What can I use to my advantage? And I will find the right people. I will get the right people in position to maximize.
And what you're saying. And what
Nebraska is what? A developmental program. Right. That's what we're built to do.
And what you're saying are traits of coaches that I would say Pete Carroll's very similar to that. I'd say Bob Stoops is very similar to that. I'd say Nick Saban, very similar to that. They're gonna do it their own way. They're going to plug and play. You know, Jim Minnesota here talks about, you know, Pete Carroll hired a 24-year-old tight end coach, Lane Kiffin.
I've heard of him.
Sounds interesting, right? That's what Pete Carroll did in year one, hired a young coach.
Uh-huh.
Heard of that before. He also inherited a talented but maligned quarterback, Carson Palmer.
But the maligned part is very on point, Jim, because I remember Carson Palmer as a recruit, and he was a big-time recruit. But when he had got there, he was already kind of considered to be a bust. So that is a great point.
And one of the things that's different between all the three previously mentioned coaches that I've been talking about here, Stoops and Saban and Carroll, one of the things that they didn't have an option at that time was the portal and NIL. So, I mean, the option for Rule to be able to go out there and rebuild a roster even faster. Our starting quarterback's going to be – it could have been a quarterback coming back. It could have been Thompson, but he was able to go into this portal that didn't exist back then. And that's where our starting quarterback is going
to
come out.
It's hard to know how much that's going to be a benefit to him or not, because there are other teams are also now.
Yeah, everyone gets to do it.
I mean, look at Iowa. Sure. They got Michigan's backup quarterback, and now they're slotted to win the West because of that.
Sure.
Clearly because of that. Because if they didn't have him, no one would be talking about Iowa in that vein.
Yeah, they brought in a couple other guys too. I think a tight end receiver.
But they always have tight ends, and they always have some. But like, if you don't have that quarterback. Right. So my point is, like, other teams have access to that as well, but it's not so much that who you got. It's more about how are you utilizing the tool. And I feel like we are utilizing the tool properly. I think we might – I heard Sip and Callahan talking about preseason magazines. And they were talking about preseason all-conference players. I mean, I think Michigan has like 6 on offense. We have nobody. And then like we have our highest guy is like second team with Quentin Newsome at cornerback, and then we got a couple third teamers and everything. So like just on paper out of the gate, we look like a lesser talented team, but how different is that if we start performing in
how surprised are you if Thomas Fedoni, you know, has this breakout season?
Are you telling me Jeff Sims doesn't have all conference ability
or an Anthony Grant at running back or whatever? I mean, you can start going
save
down
your bets.
Or any one of the number of offensive linemen that we've already been talking about in the past. Peraska stays healthy for a year. Ben Hart plays up to that.
Chief Borders, is he okay? Is he better than we thought? You know, so or
Corcoran was a top 150.
Do we get like a defensive freshman player of the year with one of those defensive
Princewell or one of those guys?
So Cameron Leonard.
Yeah, Leonard.
I feel like that's a guy's name I'm going to have to learn because I think I don't know. Well, I don't. That's too early for predictions about that. But that will be the difference maker. Like, yes, Michigan, and rightfully so, has more first team everybody's, but that's because they won. If we win more games than our players, we looked at as better players. Sure. So all we have to do is win. It's just kind of this thing. It's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? What comes first, the better players or the better development or the better record? It's like, it's in college football, it's such a blend. If you're doing right by the guys, maybe you cultivate an All-American or All Big Ten player, and that brings in more guys. It's not super complicated. It's just a little. What's the right word for it? It's all about the processes. It's all about the culture, and it's all about having coaches that know what they're doing. Like Harbaugh, 3 years ago, was looked at as a buffoon. He was. People hate him. Like, he's on the hot seat. He was on the hot seat the exact same time Scott Frost was on the hot seat for the first time.
Yep.
I mean, actually, he was on the hot seat the year before Frost got hired.
Yeah, because he was there. He got there earlier than Frost.
But what did Michigan do? To their credit, they held on to a guy that actually figured out how to figure some stuff out.
And he made some changes. One of the things he did, they got under center more.
Yeah.
They doubled down on playing a different style, a more physical style of football to compete against Ohio State, where they felt like they couldn't just man for man always recruit. Even Michigan couldn't quite recruit at the level of Ohio State if they were just going to try to go man for man, position for position. And they wanted to have a schematic advantage on them, and they got under center. They have played physical against Ohio State the way that his Stanford teams played physical against Oregon back in the day, and did things that I remember Scott Frost at one of those coaches' clinics, the first ones we went to, where when he talked about he wanted to build Oregon speed and Husker power, he specifically referenced Stanford back in the day, where he's like, we were great at Stanford or at Oregon. We did all these things. We could score 100 points on everybody, except once a year we would play Stanford and they'd hit us in the mouth, and we couldn't do this or that. And when I took over my own program, I knew I wanted to be able to beat a team that could take on that Stanford, but also go and score 100 points the way that Oregon did. And obviously, you got little pieces of both, but none of it ever led to any wins.
But that's a great point with Michigan versus Ohio State, because let's face it, they're the cream of the conference. That's not an indictment. That's just how it is right now.
Yeah,
that's just how it is right now. And you're right. Ohio State was just maybe this much better at recruiting the high end guys than Michigan. But now, what Michigan has gotten better doing is taking high end guys that they're recruiting that are maybe this much lower, but they've had them for 3 more years.
Yeah.
Or 1 more year. And that 1 more year can equate into really knowing situational football again and being able to take advantage of close game situations and beating them. Right now, they're the cream of the conference. And that was such a slow takeover that it almost was like a magic trick how he did it.
They won Ohio. This goes back again to the recency bias. And hey, we've lost, the last 6 seasons. We know what that was. Michigan lost, I think, 16 out of 17 times to Ohio State.
It's a large stretch.
I think it was 16 out of 17 times. Somebody can I'm sure, fact check me there. But they've won back-to-back now.
Yeah.
And not just back-to-back. They've done it, again, the physical style play.
That's the whole thing, it's not like the Scott – okay. If Scott Frost was going to be very successful in the Big Ten, it was going to be because of his magical offensive powers. Michigan isn't doing anything fancy. They're just grinding you out, and they're beating you down, and their players are good enough, not maybe upper echelon, but they have 6 first team all.
Let's use Iowa as our example now. Iowa's our Ohio State, and we went out there and we beat them last year, and we did.
Yep.
But one of the reasons we beat them was that Trey Palmer had a classic day, and we threw a couple deep bombs on him and everything. Okay, that's great. I'm glad we took. I'll take the win every time we can take it. For us to beat, if we're going to beat Iowa this year, the way if we're kind of progressing, I want to see us beat them a different way. I'd love to see us get under center. I'd love to see us physically beat this team. Well, I'd love to see us beat Wisconsin that way.
As a program.
As a program. Yeah, like
that looks better.
You know,
I'll take the win anyway.
I'll take the win anyway.
But I know exactly what you're talking about. Like,
to me, a more consistent thing is I don't know that every time we play Iowa, we're going to throw the ball 80-yard passes on them.
It's a better indication of future success for the program if we beat them in a very almost
I don't want to say Big Ten way, a Nebraska way. When people say, you know, like Nebraska's getting back into Big Ten football this year, how, you know, Satterfield and Rule have talked about winning in cold weather and all this, and that's Big Ten football. That's Nebraska football. Well, I know that should be that's Nebraska football first and foremost. I'm glad it works in the Big Ten, but that's Nebraska football. We need to get back to Nebraska football.
We do, but I feel
like the Big Ten can pull that out of us. That's a positive about the Big Ten. I'm not crapping on the Big Ten here. I'm just saying. The Nebraska is going to be at its best when Nebraska plays Nebraska style because football.
What will be irritating is, well, Nebraska finally learned how to play Big Ten football. Oh. Now they're winning. Like, that would be annoying because that's not true. What we have done is got away from who we were, which was more of a Big Ten blueprint. I would agree that our blueprint of success in the past was more suited for what the Big Ten currently is now. But to say that Nebraska is finally playing Big Ten football and that's why we have success will be irritating because as fans, longtime mm-hmm. fans, that's what we were clamoring for anyway. I was like, no, run the damn ball, huddle, you know, execute, hit hard on defense and turn it, make, you know, play fundamental football. Like that's what, like we never said stop doing that.
That's all.
As a fan base, we're like, I really wish we'd just go three and out so quickly that the defense was exhausted. And then we scrambled around and didn't play hard at the line of scrimmage and let teams just run the ball down our throat. Like we never said that. That's not what we wanted. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I hope we can get interceptions so quickly that we can get the ball back on offense. That's what Frost thought we needed to do. But, like, that was never going to happen in this conference. So, but regardless, I guess, if they're going to say it's Big Ten football and Nebraska is finally playing Big Ten, as long as we're winning,
yeah, because fine. We're sitting at 10-2 and they're having that conversation, then I'm happy with that too. Then that means that we're 10-2 and we're winning games and we can have that conversation. But
Tony talks about how he hates how much Harbaugh. Yeah, but what would be worse, Harbaugh or Fleck? I mean, I'd rather have Jim grow on me than Peach.
Back to Mike.
Sounded weird. They both sound like a little fungi.
PJ Fluke has a punchable face. I don't know if Harbaugh has a punchable face. I guess I've never thought of it.
Slappable. Maybe not punchable. I think he would definitely – he would be a crazy guy to fight. I wouldn't want to fight him at all. He just seems like – It would be difficult. He's crazy. He's fully crazy.
Well,
where are we at with things?
I don't know. This is maybe we'll do parting shots. What do you think?
So soon? No.
I mean, God, we've gone an hour and 3 minutes. Thank you so much. All the followers have been following along and making comments and stuff. Really appreciate it. You know what? I uploaded this. This is funny. We'll just play it here just enjoy. This is a couple weeks old, but this was this is AI. We got to be careful with AI now. Yeah, it's getting out there. This was an AI of Kirk Ferentz talking. So this is not real.
Okay.
I kind of got fooled. I'll admit it.
I was super interested.
Due to the ongoing investigation into alleged gambling improprieties at the University of Iowa, I cannot get into specifics. However, I would like to address one issue. Although it certainly would explain a lot, and I mean an awful lot, there is no truth to my son Brian shaving the hell out of points during games. None whatsoever. It was simply ineptitude. I won't be taking questions at this time. Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any fakeness.
I sent that to the guys, the other guys, that text chain. And I mean, I looked at it for 2 seconds and I sent it to those guys. I'm like, what is this? And they're like, Honk, you couldn't have fallen for that. I was like, no, I didn't. It's not that I fell for it. It's just that.
That's a little arrogant in the statement. It looks pretty real. And it's only going to get real. I'm not that mad that you've.
No,
that's what I'm saying.
It's scary as hell, is what it is. I mean,
that's probably just his real thoughts. That's the, that's the thing. Like the part that made it real is like if somebody was just gonna get real, like that's what he would say. He would say it certainly
is ineptitude.
For me, what went through my head immediately because I just wasn't. I had like 10 other things on my mind. I just watched it on Twitter one time. And I was like, what? And my very initial thought was, like, you know, he's such a straight, you know, laced kind of guy. I was like, maybe he was somehow, like, trying to have fun. Like, every once in a while, Osborne would have fun about something, like, where you wouldn't think, you know, he'd say something. And you know, he's such a deadpan kind of guy. And I was like, maybe he did that. But then, you know, again, I rewatched
when
and I was
like, feeling okay, really super silly.
Yeah. But not true, but it was funny. It's funny when it's someone else's team.
It is.
It's not funny when
AI. You know what else is fun? Is like going into an off season and not worrying about like your head coach talking about not playing a game that was the signature game on the season.
Yeah.
Like say Oklahoma was on your schedule and all of a sudden you're like trying to get out of it. That'd be embarrassing. Like say that's a season, an off season of not
fun. That was that.
So to tie it all back into a season of having fun, I really welcome the news right now from the program. I don't give a shit about what players we do or don't get recruiting wise. I know we're trying in the right places. And ultimately this year's recruiting is going to boil down to this year's record.
Yeah.
And
we can always flip a guy later.
Later on. And with the transfer portal, we can get him back anyway. To me, the focus is got to be the guys on the team this year and how good we play. We need at minimum 6 wins.
Yeah.
And minimum.
I'm talking the history.
I don't give a shit what our record's been the last 4 or 5 years. We need 6 wins this year. I love Matt Rhule, but get her there.
I'm not interested. And I don't want to do this, even as we get closer to the season. I'll let the BetCast guys do this. I'm not interested in doing a game-by-game breakdown on the show. I'll do it on Twitter with the polls just because we always do that. But I'm not interested in going through, can we beat Minnesota? Yes, right. No. Can we beat Colorado? I'm not interested in that. History, the pragmatist in me, the history would tell us that 6-6 and 7-6, 7-5, I mean, that's what Nick Saban and Bob Stoops and Pete Carroll did in their first year. And we all you know, universally consider those guys to be incredible coaches, and what they did was amazing.
They're terrible.
If we went 6-6 or 7-5 in year one, even with some close losses or whatever, nobody should sit there and look poorly on that. I think it's about building something, and it's about leading to something down the road, and really setting that foundation. That's the things I'm seeing that Rhule's doing already.
And we've talked about it before, but not all 7-5s are created equal. If we're in the 5 games and they're really tight and the other team actually beats us and we don't beat ourselves, I think most Husker fans could live with that and be okay with it. And, and you know, that's probably the best we can hope for right now. It's going to be a dogfight. Most games are going to be a dogfight this season.
Season's all about FUN, fun. Football's undefeated national champs. Thank you, Anthony. I think that's a great way to kind of go at her. So let's do a little parting shots, Matt.
All right, okay.
It has been a while since we've done one of these. It's the dog days of the off season here. Right now, the team is just getting back onto campus, starting all their summer stuff.
Yes.
You know, what are your final thoughts?
Well, I too am kind of going into fall camp mode already. I've started cultivating mass. I'm going mostly center mass. I'm using a lot of carbs and high sugar products, but I feel like later on that's going to help me with my leverage. Also, to my Lincolnites out there, voluntary water bans. Isn't that the saddest thing ever? It's like saying, "Hey, go ahead and let your yard die." And I'm like, "Hey, not on my watch, bro. Make it mandatory. If you don't make it mandatory, this guy's watering." Just kidding. But don't forget to spade neuter all your pets.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. In May, I think it was Ken Schimmick said it was the driest May in the history second driest May in the history of Lincoln. But then, like, the first 3 days of June, we basically have had, like, a full June's worth of rain already, at least down where I'm living. So, it's all cyclical. It's all cyclical. I mean, what a great transition to football there.
Exactly.
The weather. Football, it's all cyclical, baby. Yeah. It comes back.
I just want to have some fun with it.
We've had 6 straight losing seasons. It's all cyclical, baby.
It can't keep going. Huh? 7 would be terribly unlucky.
No.
No. We're going to win. We're going to have a winning season this year. Let's just say it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I'm more than confident in saying
that. And by the way, thank you for everybody in the chat. That was a lot of fun. It's always nice to have some interaction as we go because Matt pointed this out earlier, but we just have a couple of drinks and like, hey, should we go live? Let's go live. And then we went live. So it's nice to have a little direction, a little back and forth. And it was a lot of fun tonight. So thanks so much.
Yeah.
This is a great Matt's Rhule. I don't really have an
accent. Oh, yeah. We forgot. What did we say?
Go big Matt's Rhule.
We say? It's just remember.
Just remember.
Matt's Rhule. Okay, we're going to stop for a second.
Yeah.
We still have Mac has one parting shot. He has a dream. He forgot. He wants to tell you.
So my brother Mike, who's a very big Deion Sanders fan. In fact, we have a bet about how the season's going to go. Anyway, I had this dream the other day where like Mike and Matt Rhule are hanging out I'm trying to get ready for work and I can't find my shirt top, and I'm having a hard time finding my badge again to work. And the whole time I see Matt Rhule whispering, like talking to my brother. He's like, this guy is an elite. He's not ready for the big time. He's just not elite. And I'm like, it crushed me. When I woke up, I was visibly disturbed by my wife, and she's like, what's going on? I'm like, he doesn't think I'm elite. I can't find my stuff. And he's right, because I'm not ready. I'm not focused for the offseason. It was hilarious. And so I just want Matt Rhule to know I've changed the game. I'm totally locked in for the offseason.
What is wrong? I had a dream about Rhule like 2 nights ago, and I can't remember like all the details, but I remember at one point saying, like, we look alike, right?
I know. I don't remember the dream going, why are you hanging out with my brother? Should be here with my boy, Matt. He looks so much like you. We could have so much fun with this. And yeah.
Man.
So yeah. Sorry. Take two.
Just remember,
Matt Rhule.
Heard at Sports Network Production.